Hello and welcome to the IRPP's interview with the author series. Today we are joined by Audrey Macklin and François Crépeau. Audrey Macklin is a professor in the Faculty of Law at the University of Toronto, and François Crépeau is Hans and Tamar Oppenheimer Professor of Public International Law at McGill University. They are the authors of the IRPP study, Multiple Citizenship, Identity, and Entitlement in Canada. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Hello.
Professor Macklin, let me begin by asking you, how did the study come about?
The genesis for the study was back in 2006 with the evacuation of dual citizens of Canada from Lebanon. From there, subsequent developments in Canadian public policy that touched both on the question of dual or multiple citizenship and also in the ability to acquire and pass on citizenship entered into the analysis.
Professor Crépeau, in the study you write that settler societies, like Canada, have operated on the rationale that immigrants will be more likely to naturalize and integrate if doing so doesn't require severing connections to their past, to their country of origin. Can you elaborate?
Yes. This has been a sociological research outcome for the past 50 years, where you have societies, in societies where you have a requirement that people have to choose between their former nationality and the citizenship of the country they live in now, you find that that population is often divided. Many of those people will not want to relinquish and will stay as permanent residents, not acquiring citizenship of a new country, and some will relinquish. And that division, that choice that is that they're obliged to make, is divisive. It's much better if you avoid asking people making that choice between two nationalities for which they have, to which they have links and which they care for. That may lead the next generation or the generation after to abandon one of the citizenship if it doesn't have any meaning for them anymore. But that first generation that comes in should not be required to choose between citizenships that they care for.
And if I may add to that, my agreement with François, but an additional consideration is that to make the acquisition of citizenship relatively easy for newcomers becomes a tool of integration as opposed to a kind of reward or prize for having achieved some notion of complete or total integration. And so settler societies in particular understand that naturalization is a step, an important and valuable step along the path to facilitating and encouraging the kind of a commitment and engagement that we desire from newcomers and immigrants.
I would like to ask you both to respond to my next question. In the study, you argue that the global trend in accepting multiple citizenship is irreversible and that ultimately dual or multiple citizenship benefits Canada. How so?
François, do you want to begin?
I would say that what you've just said, Audrey, answers part of that question. I may add one small point. Very often states that require that you choose between your former and your present citizenship have a very cultural notion of citizenship, of nationality. That was the case, for example, for Germany. They have changed the law recently up to a certain point, but in Germany, in order to be German, you have to be culturally German, and that's why we have several generations of Turks living in Germany and not being German yet. In the case of Canada, the fact that the Canadian identity is less rooted in a well-defined past and more linked to the potentialities of the future, of what the Canadian people will do in the future. Although there is a core set of values that are regrouped inside the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms and the provincial charters, makes it much less difficult to accept multiple citizenship.
So if I can just add to what François said, in effect to restate it, we have come to understand both that we belong to a variety of communities, not just state-based communities, but communities beyond the state and below the state, if you will. We also have come to recognize that we do have belongings. We recognize our connections to more than one state, and that in the 21st century, it is much easier and likely that people will be able to sustain those meaningful connections because of technology and travel and so on. The global trend toward the recognition of dual or multiple citizenship is, I think, at least in part, a recognition both of the sociological fact, but also of the limitations of law, legal tests, and legal rules that command what we might call emotional or affective connections. We understand that you cannot order through law how people will feel. You can facilitate it, and you can enable it and encourage it, but legal rules do not create feelings of loyalty and attachment and so on.
Mm-hmm. I may add also something to that. I think that the idea that one should have one citizenship and only one was also rooted in a conception, in a political conception that was defined through nationalism. And I think that this nationalism, where you had one allegiance to one king and country, for example, is on the wane. I think the nationalism has shown over the past two centuries that it could wreak havoc in societies and in the world. And this idea that only one belonging can command one's own life is something that we have slowly discarded, mostly. As Audrey said, we have multiple belongings. We can be female, an artist, Asian, this and that. And all these belongings, all these communities that we belong to, define ourselves, and the connection we have to a state is one of them. It may be very important for some people, less so for other people, and we have to recognize this variety of belongings, which may include a multiplicity of belongings to different states.
Professor Kripo, let me follow up by asking you, because I know that you both view Canada as a sort of role model and a leader, but you also note that changes to the Citizenship Act in 2009 have struck at multiple citizenship by limiting the transmission of birthright by descent. What do you think this law means in practical terms, and what do you think it means for Canada as this kind of pioneer for multiple citizenship?
Well, what the law does is that it prevents acquisition of citizenship by descent if both the parents and the child, the parents being Canadian, were born outside of Canada. So two successive births outside of Canada means that you can't acquire citizenship by descent. Before that, there was a rule which was you could lose Canadian citizenship after a while, but it was relaxed. It was more relaxed. You could prove an attachment to Canada. You could prove a connection to Canada and still keep citizenship by descent. I think this was, I believe, a reaction by this government to the 2006 uproar in certain parts of public opinion and in certain media concerning the Lebanese evacuation of Canadians who lived permanently in Lebanon and were able to transfer citizenship to their kids and grandkids, etc. I think that we're not seeing yet many cases where it creates problems, but it will create problems in the future. Canadians are on the move. Canadians live for parts of their lives outside of Canada. Students go abroad. students are usually of an age of having kids, and they will have kids abroad, and their kids might also be studying abroad and have kids abroad, and suddenly one Canadian student who is abroad, has lived all his or her life in Canada, but was born herself or himself outside of Canada because their parents were studying abroad, will suddenly find that her kid is a foreigner and will not be able to bring that kid back to Canada unless sponsored as an immigrant. And I think that's a very awkward result, and a number of these cases will appear in the near future.
In fact, 2 points. One is that although this change to citizenship law was obliquely connected to the evacuation from Lebanon, there's absolutely no evidence that any of the Canadian citizens in Lebanon who were evacuated were, in fact, born abroad in Lebanon to Canadians who themselves were born abroad. So there's, in fact, no empirical connection whatsoever. But the idea of getting tough on citizens, citizenship, tightening up citizenship laws seem to respond, I think, to a kind of public backlash, even though it, in fact, had no direct empirical connection. The risk that François describes has already started to appear. There have been reported cases of children of Canadian citizens being born abroad and being stateless. So, for example, there's a reported case of a Canadian father who was born in Africa to Canadian parents working abroad. He grew up in Canada, however. He then went abroad, and he and his Chinese partner had a child in China. Because of Chinese law, the mother cannot pass her nationality on to her daughter because the child was born outside wedlock. And the father cannot pass his Canadian citizenship to the daughter because he himself was born outside Canada. And the result is, within less than, I think, 6 months from passage of the law, you have somebody who is now stateless who would otherwise have been a Canadian citizen.
What kinds of policy recommendations do you make in your conclusion? And perhaps you can speak to the point that you just made, Professor Macklin.
Well, in relation to the transmission of citizenship, we certainly acknowledge that there may be reasons why you might want to limit the transmission of citizenship by descent. You might not want it to continue indefinitely into the future, although some countries have done so, like Germany, and in a sense continue to do so, like Italy. But we have concerns about the restrictiveness of the Canadian law and both the wisdom of it, and we are indeed putting out there for scrutiny the rationale behind it. One of the concrete recommendations we do make, however, is a clarification of the existing law regarding naturalization, and that is that the present law requires that a permanent resident reside in Canada for 3 out of the last 5 years in order to be eligible to naturalize as a Canadian citizen. The case law has been divided on whether that period of residence has to be physical, that is, one must be physically in Canada for 3 out of the last 5 years, or whether somehow one can be a resident of Canada even though one might not be physically present for the full time. We came out with a recommendation in favor of requiring physical presence, not as a kind of get-tough policy for its own sake, but rather because physical presence in Canada is precisely the kind of encounter and opportunity that gives newcomers to Canada a chance to develop the connections, the sentiments, the sense of belonging that we think is important and valuable and should be encouraged by our citizenship rules. Since writing that, and in fact, the Canadian government seems to be formulating legislation that will do just that, and we applaud that aspect of the proposed legislation.
Professor Kippo, is there anything that you'd like to add?
No, I'm one point just to emphasize Audrey's first point. I think the idea of restricting indefinite or transmission of citizenship by descent is not necessarily a bad idea, but it should always be a rebuttable presumption, and individuals should always be able to show that they have actually meaningful connections to Canada and should be allowed to retain citizenship by descent.
Thank you both very much for your time today.
You're welcome.
Pleasure.
Audrey Macklin is a professor in the Faculty of Law at the University of Toronto, and François Crépeau is Hans and Tamar Oppenheimer Professor of Public International Law at McGill University. They are the authors of the IRPP study, Multiple Citizenship, Identity, and Entitlement in Canada. The study is available free of charge from our website, www.irpp.org.